Hey, I'm Johanna Wagstaff.
And hi there, I'm Rohith Joseph.
And we're asking for 10 minutes of your day to go through the 10 things that the UN recommends we can all do when it comes to climate change.
Please don't leave.
No.
And also, the things aren't new.
We are just wired to not do them.
We promise you to help you figure out your brains, and you and your people can make better choices to combat climate change.
10 Minutes to Save the Planet is available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
So when Jonathan Glazer won an Oscar for the film Zone of Interest, his acceptance speech became one of the most talked about moments of that show. The speech created a conversation that is still going weeks later. Today, you'll hear from Jewish creators who are trying to navigate their work in the wake of Glazer's speech. I'm Alamin Abdul Mahmoud, and this is Commotion. Okay, let me just recap before you really quickly. Jonathan Glazer made a movie called The Zone of Interest. It is a difficult and challenging movie. It is set during the Holocaust. Jonathan won the Oscar for Best International Feature for the movie, and then he used his moment on the stage to address Israel's war in Gaza, and I want you to hear what Jonathan said.
Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October... Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist?
That is Jonathan Glazer at this year's Oscars. That speech was everywhere. That speech prompted more than 1,000 Jewish creators in Hollywood to sign an open letter in response. They were criticizing Glazer's speech. The names on that letter are big. You got folks like TV creator Amy Sherman-Palladino. She's the creator of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and Gilmore Girls. You also got actor Deborah Messing. You got director Eli Roth. That letter read, quote, "We refute our Jewishness being hijacked for the purpose of drawing a moral equivalence between a Nazi regime that sought to exterminate a race of people and an Israeli nation that seeks to avert its own extermination." The controversy over Glazer's speech highlights a big ideological divide over who gets to define Jewishness. You hear that in the phrasing, right? The notion of, quote, Jewishness being hijacked. And right now, a lot of Jewish creators are trying to figure out how to navigate this push and pull. So today, on today's podcast, we have three guests who will share how they're dealing with all of this and what it means to be a Jewish artist at a time when Jewish-themed arts festivals are being canceled or being moved to different venues because of tensions over the war. I recently sat down with Washington, D.C.-based writer Emily Tamkin, Montreal's klezmer hip-hop composer Josh Dolgan, better known as So-Called, and also another Montrealer, Jess Solomon, who quit her job as a war crimes lawyer for the UN to become a full-time comedian in New York. And I started this conversation by asking Emily about why so many people took offense to Glazer's speech and what it says about this moment we're in for Jewish artists.
I think the reaction to the speech speaks to the fact that Jonathan Glazer really hit people where they live. For people who were receptive to the message, really felt it very deeply, and people who disagree with the message really felt that very deeply. And the reason is that what he was doing was saying, this is maybe, Steven Spielberg said that this was the best Holocaust movie since Schindler's List. Yeah. So this is
quite a statement for Spielberg.
So this is a very prominent film about, you know, one of the most discussed tragedies in Jewish history. Not only Jewish history, but yes, Jewish history. There are people whose interpretation of the lessons of that moment, and they've said this, I think the former Israeli ambassador to the U.S. said, the lesson of the Holocaust is that Jews should have power. And Jonathan Glazer went up there and said, that is not the message I had in mind when I made this movie, right? That this is not just about, it is about the Holocaust, but this is also about complicity. And this is also about dehumanization. And this is about what we do now in our lives. You know, Primo Levi, who was a survivor and a writer and a chemist, said, has this quote that's, it happened, therefore it can happen again. This is the core of what we have to say. It happened and it can happen anywhere. And I think Glazer's sort of unspoken addition there was, and it can be carried out by anyone. Mm-hmm. That is a very hard thing for Jewish people to hear, right? That any person, any group of people is capable of being victim and perpetrator. And I think it speaks to the how deeply felt that message is, that the reaction wasn't, oh my goodness, I disagree so strongly with that. It was first to deliberately mishear him. Then the sort of day two outrage was, well, he said as a Jew, you know, he's speaking as a Jew. And if you say as a Jew, you're a fake Jew. You don't really mean it. You don't.
Yeah.
I got news for you. Everybody who says a message about any political message drawing on their Jewish identity is speaking as a Jew. So I think there are Jewish communities, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And each is trying to sort of assert that they're the ones whose voice really counts on this issue, particularly this issue.
Josh, I want to maybe take this to you, because I think like the reaction to this Glazer letter sort of underscores that this is a very fraught time for artists, many of whom are thinking, you know, about how they should use a platform at this point. The idea that a Jewish artist would stand up in this moment and make the Jewish identity more complicated for some people is maybe the thing that, as Emily just pointed out, didn't sit well with some people, the idea that it hit them where they live. But look, you're a musician. You've incorporated Jewish culture history into a lot of your work. How would you say the current conflict made you think about what your mission should be as an artist? Because I can't imagine it's been a simple time.
I mean, the art that I particularly make that is informed by Judaism, I mean, I'm interested personally in Eastern European Yiddish culture and music. And in fact, my practice comes out of basically this reaction as an assimilated Canadian, not religious Jewish person reacting against the dominant ideology that was sort of foisted upon me growing up, which is either, you know, synagogue and the religious practice of Judaism and Zionism and the founding of Israel. And like, that's the story that we're given as kids in Hebrew school. And that always, I mean, whatever, that just sort of never resonated for me, either one of those things. And it was only finding Yiddish culture, which is sort of lost and forgotten and not a part of mainstream Jewish identity politics. I found it by accident. I found these old records and I fell in love with this beautiful old Yiddish music. And so I guess for me, it's always been about showing people and not even waving a flag and making a big deal out of it, but just sort of demonstrating with practice that there are alternative Jewish identities out there, and that it's not always about the synagogue and about Israel. So I'm on stage singing a Yiddish song from the 1920s and whatever, speaking about Bukovina and Bessarabia and the Jewish experience in these shtetls and these ghettos, this very poverty stricken Jewish amazing music happening.
So
for me now, during this fraught time, like, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. I'm a Jewish guy and I'm making art and people don't want to see it. and it's dangerous to have a Jewish concert, no matter what it is, even though it has nothing to do. In fact, it's a reaction against Zionism and the establishment, the Jewish establishment. And that sort of political, it's always been for me like this political action to be like, yo, there's more to Judaism. Like, look at all that. And that's just one tiny piece of an amazing pie of Sephardic music and North African Jewish music and Jewish culture from all over the place. But now we're all being painted with the same brush and it's just Jewish. And if you're a part of a concert that has Jewish culture or it's a festival,
the Hamilton
Jewish
Film Festival, I think
like the
Jewish
Hamilton
Film Festival has been canceled
recently,
right? Like just the idea of having Jewish in the title has kind of meant like being a threat to like your ability to continue to do the work, right?
Yeah, and I don't really think it's about an anti-Semitic thing. It's just basically for these venues and for these festivals, it just becomes literally a security risk to have Jewish artists on stages. And so, I mean, I've lost a bunch of work this summer already from places that are just a little nervous about having Jewish in the title of their
on the
theater outside, you know, on the marquee.
Yeah. Jess, I want to play you a clip from one of your comedy sets.
Oh, look, I've unlearned Zionism. All right. I've unlearned it, but I will never let go of being chosen. Okay, I need something. I need to hold on to something, all right? Chosen People is very much the gifted and talented program of religion.
Jesse, you've always approached comedy, you approach your comedy through this sociopolitical lens. As I mentioned off the top, you're a comedian, but also you've had a career as a war crimes lawyer for the United Nations. You're also a Jewish woman who's married to a Palestinian woman. I think given all of that, what added responsibility do you have, do you feel as a comedian right now, navigating this moment?
I mean, you know, I think I've been talking about this stuff for a long time. Almost, you know, the entire time I've been doing comedy. And it's, I don't know if I've ever thought of it as a responsibility so much. I mean, maybe now, but like originally it's just that you know, you write about what you know, and this, my background, and I've always been somebody interested in politics. So I was necessarily going to be that kind of a comedian. I'm not super absurdist, and my brain doesn't work in the, like, let's talk about minutia stuff, yeah, which I do love. And then because I got to know first as a friend on the comedy scene in Montreal, my now wife, Iman, she, being Palestinian, I mean, that for me was a real education. And necessarily a lot of things just came out in our marriage, and that, you know, related to the conflict, but came from a kind of everyday sort of marital lens, which people really responded to, because it was sort of like these marriage jokes, but then they had this other quality and something about Israel Palestine that I've noticed as a comedian, which is, I mean, I think everyone maybe that works in creative work understands that, like, there's, with all of the kind of content that's out there, it's hard to, like, have references that everybody resonates with. And, like, yeah, Israel-Palestine is definitely, like, one still monoculture. Like, it doesn't matter what tiny rural place you are, what country you're in.
You're familiar.
It's like, everybody is, like, you're Jewish and you're married to a Palestinian. And they're like, oh, my God. You know, like, it's, so it's, I don't want to, like, play that as some big responsibility. It's just that was sort of, like, what came naturally, artistically.
Hi, I'm Willa Paskin, the host of Decoder Ring, Slate's podcast about cracking cultural mysteries. On Decoder Ring, we dive down rabbit holes and obsessively explore questions hiding in plain sight. Like, why has slow dancing gone out of style? And when did we all become obsessed with hydration? And where did the word mullet, you know, to describe a hairstyle, come from? That's Decoder Ring, named one of the best podcasts of 2023 by the New York Times. Listen to new episodes every 2 weeks and make sure to follow us so you never miss one.
If folks are just joining us, my name is Alamine Abdul-Mahmoud, and right now you're listening to Commotion. My guests today are Emily Tamkin, Jess Solomon, and Josh Dolgan, a.k.a. So-Called. And we're speaking about the ongoing and very polarized reaction to Jonathan Glazer's Oscar acceptance speech with the Zone of Interest, and how it has kind of been a window into this growing divide within the Jewish community. Emily, I want to tell you a story. Okay, so I was born in Sudan. I was born in Sudan, and the very first passport I ever held was the Sudanese passport. And on my passport, they had a little stamp that said it's valid for all countries except for Israel. That was not because Israel was not willing to let Sudanese people in. It's because I was born in a place that was like where the anti-Semitism is like national policy, right? It was like, we will not be dealing with the state of Israel. We will not be. I remember a lot of conversations about Jewish people, the conflation of the state of Israel with Jewish people was kind of a common thing where I grew up. And then I moved here and I learned that actually that is not necessarily how this operates, that there is actually like a great divide and division about the relationship between Judaism and Israel, between Jewish people and Israel. And mercifully, you put a book out 2 years ago that got into all of this. It is called Bad Jews. It analyzes this very ideological rift, right, that we're talking about between Zionism and anti-Zionist Jews. And this was before the current Gaza conflict flared up. Now you're 2 years after this book came out. How is that book sitting with you now, would you say?
Yeah, look, so Bad Jews is a roughly 100-year history of American Jewish politics and identities with a focus on how we've contested those identities and what it means to try to render your identity legible to the broader population, but also to your other Jews, And what does it mean to be Jewish in America? Like to have Jewish politics, to have Jewish faith. Like what does that mean? And one of the themes that comes up again and again is, you know, is people telling others, no, you're doing it wrong. I'm doing it right and you're doing it wrong. And in fact, maybe you're doing it so wrong that you don't even count as a Jew anymore. And I have to say that I think that's like I'm seeing it play out in this current moment. I'm seeing it play out, but at a fever pitch. So it's not like I stand by everything I wrote in the book. I think, but even more so, right? So, you know, it's in the, oh no, it's you're an as a Jew Jew that I referenced earlier. Oh, it's saying, you know, oh, you're intermarried, so obviously you can't take Judaism that seriously. Or, you know, the Jews who are out for a ceasefire. Oh, those aren't even really Jews. Like, and I guess the thing that is disheartening to me is that, like, do you not realize that that's not an argument? If I make an argument and your response is not to respond to it or to engage with it, but rather to say you're not even an interlocutor in this debate, you haven't won the argument. You've just drawn a smaller circle around yourself. And I think that we're seeing that. And you know, I just think that I understand that these are all heavy issues. I understand people feel very passionately about them. It's identity. It's literally the most personal thing. But at the same time, if this sort of, you know, let me put it a different way, and then I'll stop because I've gone on a while. But I reported this piece recently on, it was comparing the Red Scare, during which mainstream American Jewish institutions opened their rolls, said, FBI, here are the socialist and communist sympathizers, like, take them. And also, in some cases, said that it would be anti-Semitic to go easy on Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, who were accused of spying for the Soviet Union. Whether or not Ethel Rosenberg did this was highly, like, is still contested. She had two small children. She was sent to her death.
When you say they opened their roles, you mean like they opened like their membership books?
Turned over membership, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And the sort of normal narrative is that this was done because of fear of anti-Semitism. And that's true. Like, that's real. People were afraid. And also, they had contempt for communist Jews and communist sympathizing Jews. And this was a moment where they could sort of police the boundaries of what it was to be Jewish and be allowed in. And I think we're seeing a similar, I'm not saying this moment is one-to-one with the Red Scare. Like, that was a very particular and very intense moment in American history and in American Jewish history. But when I log on and see, you know, the head of the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, agreeing with somebody that it's fake Jews who are protesting, like, I know part of it is I understand.
I should just let people know, like, listening at home, like, your hands are kind of up in the air incredulously.
I mean, you literally
don't have the words for this. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think, and I understand this is an audio program and I can't just gesticulate, but like, my point is that I understand that anti-Semitism is on the rise and that people are afraid and that is a part of it. I'm not trying to downplay that at all. But what I am saying is that there is also an element of this that is contempt for Jews who disagree with these mainstream organizations and that this moment is being used to cast those people out. Like, that's what we're seeing as well, in addition to the fear.
We should point out that we are just a few weeks away from Jewish families gathering to celebrate Passover. This is a holiday that marks the liberation of Jews from slavery in Egypt, their journey to the promised land, you know, and I imagine a lot of families at the Seder table could turn into a battleground for this current conflict, you know, like a lot of different ideas could be crashing into each other. Maybe I'll start with you on this, Josh. How are you feeling going to Passover this year?
Well, I mean, I come from a pretty progressive family.
You put a quote unquote on progressive there.
Because Jews are very gestural. I'm sorry.
It's okay. That's not a problem.
A gesture is very important. No. So I come from a progressive family, in quotes or not, just because there's a range of progressiveness. I mean, my dad, who's going to be 81 or just turned 81, he's a different kind of, he comes from a different kind of progressive idea than my brother, who is 50, who is super progressive. And then there's my dad, who, like, is rather progressive and super informed and knows his history and you know, was a diplomat like, he's really considered this story his whole life. But his idea of the importance of Israel is going to be in conflict with my brother, who's, you know, like, just super, like, this is a genocide and this is apartheid. And frankly, I'm kind of in the middle. And luckily, I mean, we also have other people in the family who are, you know, have people in Israel in the IDF right now, and people, you know, and then I have other people in my family who are.
Your point is, like, it's you've got a complexity, a range of complexity, even within your own family here.
That's for sure. And yeah. So all we can agree on for the moment will be the matzo ball soup. And we could, you know, hope but Passover is about, it's really about telling the story and making it relevant for new generations. And it's a weird story, and it's this like ancient text, but the idea of Passover is to sit at the table and tell this ancient text in relevant ways. And so it'll be a very interesting year and for telling that story.
Emily, I think it's important for me to point out that the idea of being progressive and being in support of Israel, those are not mutually exclusive. I know plenty of people who have been calling, for example, for a ceasefire, who also support Israel's right to exist, support its historical legitimacy. For them, those two ideas are not held in conflict. As you sort of approach Passover, what are the things that you're thinking about, you know, showing up to the table, do you think?
Yeah. The Passover story ends with us saying next year in Jerusalem. And there are some people who take that to mean like, see, this has one political interpretation with respect to Zionism. And there are some people who sort of write that out of the story. And I guess for me, because like all stories, it's interpretation, right? To me, the fact that it's always next year, it's always searching, it's always, you know, you're always, the story continues, right? You keep telling it and you keep trying to find the moral of it and you keep going. And by the way, I think that's true even for Jews, even in Jerusalem, right? Like to me, the story has an inherent not yetness. I'm stealing part of this from Shaul Mugid's book, The Necessity of Exile, where he talks about like part of, to him, part of Jewishness is just the constant search. And that's true for, like, again, that's not limited to diasporic Jews. And I guess what I will be thinking of this Passover is that not yetness, right? That the story continues, the debate continues, the interpretation continues. That you haven't arrived at the end of the story when the meal is over, when the Seder's over, right? You keep telling it and you keep arguing over it and you keep going over it and you keep pushing to try to find what the moral of that story is, knowing that you might never find it. But it's the work of your life to try.
I will give the last word here, Jess, to you. What are you thinking about?
Well, Passover, you know, has always been my favorite holiday with my Palestinian wife, because as it happens, we do tell the story of how the Jews escaped the Pharaoh in Egypt while she whispers in my ear, "Let my people go." keep it down. It's too awkward. But at this point, I'm not speaking to anybody, and it's this goes back to since the last Passover, we haven't spent Passover together. Things have just been too hard.
It's quite a note for us.
Sorry to end. I gave you a joke, okay. And then I was like, "And I'm going to close my video because I'm like going to cry."
No, but I think that's, you know, we speak a lot about within Jewish families, but certainly in the United States, like the majority of Jews who got married in the last 10 years married somebody who's not Jewish. And that includes families who are Muslim or families who are Palestinian. Mm-hmm. And that's also a part of telling the Passover story now. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate you sharing that.
Also,
I will say that we just had Purim, and I think that a lesson that's not taken enough from or at all from Purim is that interfaith marriage saved the Jews.
I appreciate you being able to pivot even to that, because like I can see that you have tears in your eyes. You know, like this is not an easy ask to have this conversation. So, thank you for showing up to it. I can appreciate that it's been difficult for everybody. I can appreciate that it's been heavy, and in many cases, sort of like the kind of heaviness that like you can't really escape from. What you've all brought to this has been a type of searching that I've really appreciated. So I want to say thank you. I want to say, Jess, I'm sorry to end this conversation in a tearful note. Thank you for being here. Thank you to all of you for being here, Josh, Emily, Jess.
Thank you for hosting the conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Anytime. Come back anytime. We'll keep talking about this. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Jess Solomon is a comedian from Montreal, currently living in New York. Emily Tamkin is a writer based in Washington, D.C., and author of the book Bad Dudes. And Josh Dolgan is a Montreal musician better known as So-Called. Listen, before we go, I just want to clarify something that was said in that discussion. You might have heard us mention that the Hamilton Jewish Film Festival was recently canceled by its original host venue over safety and security concerns. Well, since we've hosted this conversation, the festival has found a new home. It opens this coming Sunday at Peller Hall in Ancaster, Ontario. That is it for the show. I hope that today's conversation gave you something to think about. I'm certainly going to be sitting with a lot of these ideas. In the meantime, my name is Al-Amin Abdul Mahmoud. I'm going to be back tomorrow. I will see you then.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.